Are you ready? It's time for On the Double with the Double S Express. Great sports talk and big-time guests with Sean Wally and Sean Boyd. On the Double with the Double S Express.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally here in Houston, normally joined by Sean Boyd, but we've got John Wittig in Tacoma, Washington, filling in for Sean tonight, as Sean has, unfortunately, much more important things to deal with.
Yeah, Sean, how you doing tonight? I'm glad you're still traveling the United States safely. And yeah, God bless Sean Boyd and his family, his father Gil, in intensive care at St. Joseph's Hospital in Tacoma. Just celebrated his 70th birthday a few weeks ago, and prayers go out to him and his family. Sean, we hope the best for Gil. Speedy recovery, and our prayers are with you, my man.
Absolutely, and Gil is one of the biggest supporters of the show, probably one of the best guys at always listening to the show. And I'm sure if Sean could in any way right now, he'd be blaring the cell phone speaker and have the show going for Pops there. And man, just such a blessing that Mr. Boyd was able to travel down, 2 weeks ago to Sacramento and San Francisco and have time with Sean and Denise and the whole Boyd clan down there as they went down to watch Devon play basketball for Chaminade as they played 4 games in the state of California within a week. And great family time. They had a blast, 70th birthday, and now unfortunately this had to happen. And it just goes to show you that, you know, you never know. You never know what's next. And get the checkups at the doctor, and every chance you get, say hi and tell everybody you love them.
Yeah, you know, tomorrow's not promised, and, you know, like I said, right now, just positive thoughts and prayers go out to Boyd's family and the doctors and stuff at St. Joe's and just, you know, everybody that's involved, so. But anyways, how's things in Houston there, Mr. Wally? You're not going to go take off over to NASA, go launch up into outer space, are you?
No plans of any rocket launching. I think that's a little too high for my liking. But, you know, I don't think they have any clue what winter is down here. It's been 65, 70 the last 3 days, so I couldn't ask for better weather.
Well, there you go. Just make sure you got your sunscreen. We don't want you to get burnt up now.
Yeah, get a tan in January. Who knew that was possible?
Right, no doubt, bro. So what's up? What are we going to talk about this week before we get our guest Steve Sandmeyer on?
Well, John, you know, it is a big week in the National Football League. There's some kind of game in Arizona. I don't know if you've heard anything about it, because all they seem to talk about is Deflategate in New England.
You know, I did hear they were playing some kind of football game down there, a little one, not huge or anything. They were wearing real funky uniforms. Oh, not the Pro Bowl. You're not talking about that game. Okay. The one that's still coming up. Yeah. That is a big game coming up. Seattle, of course, looking to be back-to-back Super Bowl champs. Man, more than half the battle already accomplished just in getting to the game.
And, John, how much do you think it helps Seattle that they went through it all last year? They went through the hoopla, the media day. They went through what it's going to be like the 2 weeks leading up to the game, the 1 week when you're down in the city of the Super Bowl, and they know everything that's going to happen and how to make it a business trip, and they don't have to wonder what's around the next corner.
You know, these Seahawks, this whole group of, this kind of new wave, new era of athletes and stuff, you know, they don't say the politically correct answers or the things that, you know, people generally want to hear. You ask them how good they are, they're going to tell you. And these Seahawks, you know, they've embraced that. You know, they kind of got put on the map back in 2012. You know, week six, I believe it was, playing the Patriots, you know, down, you know, real similar to this game that we just saw against Green Bay, actually. You know, they were down fourth quarter. I want to say it was 23-10. You know, Russell Wilson, this rookie quarterback that people still had a lot of opinions out there, floating on both sides of the fence, a lot of them on the, you know, I don't know type of stuff, you know, and, you know, he was only five games into his career, and three quarters into that game, you know, people were still throwing up quite a few things, and then the next thing you know, kind of like the Green Bay game last week, boom, 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 Braylon Edwards catches a touchdown, Sidney Rice, the two long-departed veterans that helped, you know, help Russell that first rookie season, you know, and you mad, bro, put Richard Sherman on the map, and the Legion of Boom was born. So, you know, these guys, they, you know, Jeremy Lane speaking out about Gronkowski, and, you know, I think these guys are kind of disappointed that the whole deflate gate's taken away from their little press conferences and sound bites. They like the attention.
Exactly. It's almost like everybody's forgetting that not only are the Seahawks involved, but hey, we're the world champions still. Nobody's taken that away from us, and we've got 60 minutes of football left in us to hopefully, for the 12th man, Seahawks fans and the team, for them to repeat and have two Lombardi trophies in a row and have that vaunted dynasty that the last one was, ironically, the Patriots in 03-04.
There's so many reasons why playing the Patriots is so right, and Tom Brady and Belichick. And, you know, it's also kind of right that they're under their little shadow of Deflategate. And, you know, the bottom line is Belichick's been around for a good portion of my last 15 to 20 years, and he's impressed the heck out of me. You know, and Brady for that matter, too. You know, you look at what the Seahawks have been doing, you know, they talk about Russell Wilson, third-round pick, you know, Sherman, fifth-round pick, Baldwin, Curse, you know, not undrafted. You know, you have to be shrewd. You have to invite players. You can't just be so pompous and arrogant and egotistical that, oh, well, I picked eight guys, and those eight guys are, you know, that was my first-round pick, so he's going to be the starter. No, it doesn't work like that. You know, you give that guy the first-round pick because he had a better career or he has the better, you know, potential or ceiling for down the road. But, you know, let's remember, Tom Brady was a sixth-round pick. Remember, what is it, the Brady 6 or the Brady 7? You know, all those smart guys that picked all them players, you know. The Brady 6 is one thing, but let's remember sixth round, that means what? 30 players per round times six rounds, you know. 100-and-something players got picked before Tom Brady. How many guys you think would go back and change that if they could?
Absolutely, and this game has so many different storylines and plots and subplots. How about the fact that Brandon Browner, Seahawk, last couple of years, comes out today and says he's telling his teammates to hurt and punish the injuries of Richard Sherman and Earl Thomas and to break them if you have to.
Hey, you know, I was telling some friends on the Facebook and stuff the other day, and today too for that matter, Brandon Browner is a beast. If you hadn't had any opportunity to turn it on to NFL Network and their great coverage, you know, they have a lot of access that most don't. Earl Thomas, Richard Sherman, Cam Chancellor, they all spoke about Brandon Browner, what he brings to the table. And, you know, that whole Legion of Boom, you know, he was the he was that veteran presence for all those young cats. You know, he was the one that kind of brought that nasty attitude, and that, you know, he wasn't no first-round pick neither. You know, he's a 6'4 guy that everybody said he was playing the wrong position. He had to prove himself in Canada for a few years. And, you know, it is what it is. I mean, I think just because he said it to media and we heard it as Seahawks fans doesn't mean much, because really – every football player will tell you, if they know somebody's got a gimpy whatever, you know, they're going to go and try to test that, you know, as much as they can. They're going to test somebody's leg or hip if you're a speed guy. They're going to try to send you deep a few times. If you haven't been playing, they're going to test your endurance. So it sounded a bit vulgar, but that's because Browner, again, just like these other guys, he has marketed himself. For a guy that, you know, was very unknown in college and had to play in the CFL, most people can tell you who Brandon Browner is these days. And I made a comment last week, and, you know, I stand by it. I think Revis and Browner are arguably the best secondary, you know, cornerback tandem in the league. We have the better defense and the better secondary. But if you just take two corners and match them up against the two best guys every time, Revis and Browner are pretty, you know, I wouldn't bet against them.
That's interesting because we know that they're, as you're saying, very, very good. But you got to look at Browner. He did this in Seattle as well. He led the league in DB penalties this season with, it was either 12 or 14. It was just almost one a game. It's, you're not that great of a corner if you have to do that every game.
Hey, what team led the league in penalties the last 2 years? Seattle Seahawks. You know, you can't push and pull and play great defense and in-your-face attacking style without, you know, drawing a few flags. And that's why, you know, that's why a lot of people had a lot of issues about that whole, Detroit-Dallas finish with the pass interference, no pass interference, picking up of the flag, and just the whole process of that. You know, it was a point of emphasis this year for the league. You know, Pete Carroll knew that. The reason it was a point of emphasis is because the Seahawks won a Super Bowl using the rule book and the aggressiveness and being able to, you know, engage the receivers. And they took that to the limits and made the referees call the game. And first 5 minutes of the game, first couple drives, you'll see the defense. They're going to push and pull and set the tone. That's when they talk about setting the tone. That's what they're doing. They're trying to see what the referees are going to allow. And if you go in there soft and, you know, soft-footing it around, then the refs are going to call it, at a, you know, that kind of a game. But if you go out there and you lay down some hat like Cam Chancellor did, you know, the first couple plays of last year's Super Bowl, when you come across the middle and you get hit by Cam Chancellor, in those types of things, you're letting the referee know, hey, this is the type of intensity we're playing at today. So you just tell us what we can do and what we can't do so we can keep playing. That's what the Seahawks want to do. They don't want to have to think about how hard, and they're not going to. And the same thing with Browner. That's what makes them great, is that they're not concerned about penalties and stuff. If you got to adjust, you got to adjust. But, you know, there was a game a couple weeks ago, I think it was Michael Bennett, you know, God bless him, one of our best defensive linemen and one of our best characters and, you know, fun-filled characters on our team. And, you know, he lined up offsides like two or three plays in a row. You know, and you could see it on TV. You know, he had his big old helmet sticking way across the neutral zone. But it was like two or three plays in a row, you know, and Carroll or, you know, D.C., Quinn finally brought him over to the side and said, hey, what the hell are you looking at? You know, what if, let's pay attention here. We just gave him a first down without running a play. You know, and that's the big, I think that's going to be a big key, is that you got the two number one seeds, really good offense, really good defense, two highly respected coaches, two teams that seem to be unflappable, that have dealt with pressure, conspiracy theories, you know, me against the world, both. I'm looking forward to a really good Super Bowl. There's so many great matchups to look at, and I'm excited. I'm really excited.
Now, John, we were talking earlier about Tom Brady, and got to give credit to our man and my co-host, Sean Boyd. He obviously is listening, tuning in, seeing how things are going and what we are doing here tonight. And he texts, he let me know here that I believe he's talking about Tom Brady, saying that there were 180 players chosen ahead of Tom Brady, who has multiple Super Bowl championships, is looking for another. And, you know, it's just a great story. And there's a lot of them, of guys that are overlooked, that go undrafted. There's a lot of them on the Seahawks. you know, a handful of teams have one or two diamonds in the rough that somehow start as coal, nobody thinks anything of them, and then somehow the cream rises to the top.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. And, you know, I'm glad that, like any investigation and stuff, and especially after the Ray Rice and all the different things the NFL's been through, you know, regardless, I mean, today they got the poor scapegoat has been announced. You know, they said there's the locker room attendant that had the mysterious X amount of minutes that he took the balls from the locker room to the officials that are unaccounted for or whatnot. Well, you know, the bottom line is that it's going to take a while to go through that whole investigative process. I wouldn't expect them to do it in a rush and just throw reckless innuendo out there for people. Unfortunately, the media is going to speculate and do what they do. But I think everybody that's involved, including the Seahawks, some real irate fans. I've been watching the Facebook and Twitters and stuff. Doesn't make sense to me. I mean, I've heard people actually say that they should boot the Patriots and play against the Colts. I don't think anybody wants that. I don't think anybody wants to play the Colts. There's no legacy there. I mean, honestly, I think the Seahawks would rather play the Patriots with deflated footballs and just go ahead and see what happens.
Yeah, it's definitely... You've got Jerry Rice coming out today saying if the Patriots win, there needs to be an asterisk. And here we go again with these asterisks that everybody wants in baseball record books for the steroid era. And now Rice is talking about that for the Super Bowl if the Patriots win because of the deflated balls and Deflategate. And it's just a shame that in the what's potentially going to be the world's most all-time watched event, because last year's Super Bowl was, and it seems like every year it grows higher and higher, and that, you know, it has to be a side note or a thought of an asterisk because XYZ happened and it wasn't all about the play of the teams on the field.
Yes, indeed. And I just had a quick laugh. I just had to think to myself, you know, it is nice to have Sean with us and paying, you know, sticking along with us. You know, I'm doing my best to fill in for Sean Boyd, you know, so I appreciate you keeping me on point because I'm going to surely make a few mistakes here and there. So thanks for keeping me in check. And, you know, tell Pops to wake up because we got a Super Bowl party this coming Sunday. So, but yeah, no, that's for sure. That's for sure. It's everything. I'm just excited for this Super Bowl. I wish I was in Arizona. If I could have my wishes, that's what I would be.
And one of the other many subplots is the fact that Pete Carroll now gets another shot at his former employer, Bob Kraft and the Patriots, where he was head coach for 3 seasons, fired after an 8-8 year. And now, do you think he'll get much vindication personally over a victory from the owner that fired him years ago?
You know, it's hard to say. Pete Carroll seems to be such a, you know, happy-go-lucky type of guy, and he really seems genuine when he talks about, you know, the things that, you know, controlling what you have control of and those types of things, you know. And he went to USC and took a team that's known in college football, you know, one of the top 4 or 5 institutions of college football, and resurrected a franchise, dynasty, whatever you want to call it. There came to Seattle and took a team in a city for that matter that you know almost coulda shoulda wouldas and you know delivered their first Super Bowl championship. So me myself and I probably would have some vindication and probably would send Bob Kraft and all the folks that are with the Patriots a little, you know, thank you card or something of that fact over the after the Super Bowl victory. But I don't think Pete Carroll's that kind of guy. I think he's genuinely just happy for his team and his, you know, his players and coaches. He's looking forward to the challenge. as is Belichick. I mean, I think both, I think Tom Brady, for the most part, as long as he's not getting hit by too many sacks and blitzes, he's looking forward to trying to, prove himself against this so-called great defense in his mind. He wants to go out and solidify his legacy. I mean, six Super Bowls, I don't think they've been deflating the balls every, I'm not going to get into the tuck rule thing, but besides the point,
Let's not get Sean Brady tonight.
He won three Super Bowls back in the early 2000s, and I mean, if anything, people talk about karma, things of that nature, 2001, 9/11 was that year. The Patriots, it was just one of those kind of things that, it was like, it happened. It was cool. They came out there. That was before the Patriots were the Patriots. Then they were still the Clippers. now they're the Yankees. It's funny how things change and your perspective changes, but, when they won that first Super Bowl and they came out holding hands and as a team instead of being announced individually, and they were playing, the greatest show on turf and all those Hall of Famers. I mean, this year's class is almost all freaking St. Louis Rams, Warner, Falk's already in. I think Isaac Bruce got in. Azakim, I think, but it's just amazing to me for both of these teams. Both of these teams, there is no upstart. There is no Cinderella this year. Not anymore. You got 1A and 1B or, whatever you want to call it, squaring off. And like I said earlier, all the matchups, the coaching matchups, Seattle is one of those teams that when they go in at halftime, they make adjustments, and they're usually a lot better at it than the other team. They had something up on when I was at it was either the Panthers game or the Packers, one of those two, the divisional or the conference game. And they put up a stat on the big screen that Seattle has had the lead or if they've had the lead in the fourth quarter or they've had at least a lead or something, something significant that I'm screwing up, but they've had an NFL record like 60-something games where they've had at least a lead in the game. There's teams that get shut out every week, and they've had a lead in every game or something crazy, and it's a testament to the whole team, the philosophy, the believing in each other, great players, good health, not getting injured. There's a lot of good factors that go in, and both teams are riding really good right now. I mean, the Patriots, if anybody's been looking, LeGarrette Blount's been looking like his own little version of beast mode, and, he's a big boy, and he's been to a lot of big games. He might be the most fortunate guy in NFL football right now, considering he was cut from his team not more than 2 months ago and basically out of a job to being in the Super Bowl. And, their defense has been playing great. They've got a lot of fine young talent, especially on the defensive end, Jamie Collins, Chandler Jones. It's not just Browner and Revis, the names that you're familiar with, and Brady. They're a very well-coached team. And like Pete Carroll and the Seahawks, Belichick uses all 53 men on his roster. Everybody can do something. You think that field goal, fake field goal, John Ryan to, the Patriots and Seahawks both come out in unbalanced formations where the tackle will be left uncovered and it's actually an eligible receiver, and they're heavy on the other side of the line. They'll have two tight ends and a tackle, and they've got four guys on, the other side of the line. But that tackle's eligible on the left side, the uncovered side. And they actually ran some, they ran that trick play. They were having some issues a few weeks ago, the Patriots, and they threw the double pass, and that's one thing that Harbaugh mentioned when the Ravens played the Patriots. They do all this stuff. They're very well versed in the rule book. PSI, not trying to bring up the whole deflate gate, but they're very well versed in the rule book, both coaches, and they will make the referees do their jobs. They will make both coordinators on both sides do their jobs, because if you don't recognize, and every time they come out in that formation and that tackle's left wide open, sooner or later they're going to try to exploit it. And that's why it's going to be such a fun matchup.
That's the voice of John Wittig filling in for Sean Boyd tonight. And you'll want to stick around. On the other side of the break, we'll have big-time guest tonight, Steve Sandmeyer from 1090 The Fan, CBS Sports Radio in Seattle, host of the Steve Sandmeyer Show, coming up next here on The Double with the Double S Express.
What's my image?
What's my image?
What's my image?
At Images Barbershop and Styles, you get the best cut, the best design, and the best styles in the Sacramento area. Plus the affordable price, along with the fun, family-friendly atmosphere, you'll walk away with a look of satisfaction and the feeling of a new you. Do you have your image?
We have ours!
Images Barbershop and Styles, located at 10040 Bruceville Road, Elk Grove, California, Suite 140. For appointments, call 916-271-0218. That's Images Barbershop and Styles.
I'm Chris Walls, and I'm a truck driver from Missouri. For 13 hours a night, I sit in my truck and I drive. Out of boredom, I'll stop and eat. If I'm not doing fast food, I guarantee there's a bag of chips open on my dashboard. Along with that, I'm good for about 4 liters of soda a night. That was all until Andro 400. I started out 4 months ago weighing 341 pounds, and since taking Andro 400, I have dropped 45 pounds. I'm sleeping better. There's no cravings. There's no excessive thirst. My knee pains went away. I've had some lower back issues, and I've noticed that that went away, and I can only contribute that to Andro 400. One thing that Andro 400 said on the radio ad says it attacks belly fat. Well, let me tell you, it did. I've lost 6 inches. This product really does work.
So guys, if you'd like to experience similar results, then get Andro 400. The safe, natural, and inexpensive way to boost your testosterone. Go to andro400.com. andro400.com.
Let's get back to great sports talk with big-time guests on The Double with the Double S Express.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally, normally joined with Sean Boyd, but John Wittig stepping in, pinch hitting for Sean tonight while Sean cares for his dad and his family as we wish Gil Boyd a speedy recovery in the ICU at St. Joseph's in Tacoma, Washington. And let's go out to the holysmokenuts.com phone lines and welcome in Steve Sandmeyer, host of the Steve Sandmeyer Show on 1090 The Fan, CBS Sports Radio in Seattle. Steve, is there anything going on in Seattle right now?
No, not really. I think there's some sort of football game this weekend, so I think it's taken up a little bit of time. I wish there were a way to measure the productivity in the workplace during the week, and maybe even next Monday, because it's got to be low. I mean, how can you possibly concentrate on some of that stuff when your team is about to potentially win a second consecutive Super Bowl, at the very least get a chance to defend it? It's just starting to sink in for a lot of people, and I think it's going to be a great week. I don't mind the hype. I love it. I think this is fun. I think we should embrace this. Enjoy this, because I think we're going to look back on these 2 years and obviously regard them as very, very special years.
Now, Steve, what are your thoughts on how the national focus is on the ridiculousness that is Deflategate, and the Seahawks are right where they like to be, almost flying under the radar, even though they're the defending world champions?
I think they prefer that, Sean. I think they look at it, and they've already been asked about it by the media, and the response has been in one way, shape, or form or another of just saying that's their problem, it's not our problem. I think they love it. I think they love the fact that all the public money in Vegas right now is on New England, and the fact that New England is now favored in the game, even though it's only a slight point spread. It's only a point and a half, maybe 2 points, but this is exactly where they want to be. They have played the whole quote-unquote respect card for the last 3 years pretty much, And they're going to find a way. They're going to find a way to you know, play second fiddle and play that up. And that's what they do. They almost need it. They almost need that card for them to be at their best. And I'm really excited. This is outstanding in terms of a matchup because different from last year, I don't think the Seahawks really are going to know exactly what New England is going to do offensively. But because they're so basic in terms of their formation, you know, they're not going to have to switch out, and it's not going to be a cat and mouse game. It's truly going to be Seattle doing their thing defensively and saying, okay, you know, throw at us what you will, because New England is very diverse. I mean, anytime you can go from giving LeGarrette Blount only 3 carries against Baltimore in the win and then turn around and give it to him 30 times in the win against Indianapolis in the AFC title game, it's going to be interesting to see what comes out of the wash on Sunday offensively. And obviously the number one defense in the land feels they're ready, and here we go. Another offense versus defense conversation in the Super Bowl.
Steve Sandmeyer, this is John Whitting. It's always a pleasure listening to you. You know, I think you hit it right on the head. The two teams are so, you know, just well-matched. So many different positions, but especially when the Patriots' offense plays the Seahawks' defense. And like you said, the Seahawks, they don't come at you with a bunch of exotic stuff. They line up with their best 11 guys. They make maybe one or two substitutions. You know, they've got the depth and stuff, but they basically play what they play, and they say, show me what you got. But the thing is that the Patriots have so much to show. And what are they, you know, what are they going to do? What are they going to try? And, like, you know, are they going to try to establish the run? Or are they just going to come out firing, you know, Brady throwing 20 passes? And, you know, just what are they going to try to do?
They like the underneath stuff. And I know that should probably sound familiar because that's kind of what Peyton Manning tried to do with the Denver Broncos early in the game last year during the Super Bowl. The difference is they've got a hammer. LeGarrette Blount, he's listed at 247, and I'll bet anyone anything he's not under 250. He's a load, and I'm sure they're going to try and establish the run, if anything, to create some sort of balance. I'm curious how the scat-type receivers, guys like Edelman, guys like Amendola, are going to match up and who's going to get them. And don't sleep on Brandon LaFell. He's pretty big. He's 6'3". He's 210. He had a solid season as well. And then obviously Rob Gronkowski, I'm quite certain Cam Chancellor is going to get the lion's share of him, if not K.J. Wright, who's one of the better outside linebackers in terms of providing coverage. It's really fun. I think it's going to be a lot of fun, and you're right. You know, that you look at what Seattle does in terms of their scheme, it's really vanilla. They just have faster players and more versatile players. They have cornered the market on hybrid players that can play on the outside or play interior. Michael Bennett, probably the most underrated lineman in the NFL because he can play every single position up and down that line from one end all the way to the other. Guys like Bruce Irvin that can be upright at that Leo spot or maybe have his hand down and rush off the edge. Malcolm Smith really didn't see the field in terms of a starter this year. That's how deep they were at linebacker. And they don't really do a whole lot. The reason why they don't need to do a whole lot is because they have versatile players. Their base cover three, Cam Chancellor basically stays in the box as an extra linebacker. And when they have players on that defense that have speed, that never hurts, and they have versatility and can do 3 or 4 different things, they don't have to be exotic in terms of the formations. This is not going to be a situation where New England's going to line up and then there's going to be a ton of checkoffs and Seattle's going to move out of something. Obviously, if you know there's some sort of massive shift in a formation, then Seattle will react accordingly. But I love the fact that no matter what New England lines up in, Seattle's basically going to stay and cover and react that way. And I think keeping it simple and being versatile has been a huge reason for their success because they don't do a lot of the zone blitzing and they don't do a lot of the deception and they really don't do a lot of blitzing, period. You know, they just have versatile players, and obviously they put a premium on speed, and clearly it's worked out now 2 years in a row with the number one defense and 3 years in a row with a defense with the fewest points allowed.
Yeah, and I think you got it right. You know, Gus Bradley, when he was here, and now Dan Quinn, the players attest to the fact that they keep it so simple that the players don't have to think. They just can go and just play at a really, really high speed without worrying about thinking where they're supposed to be and where, you know, who's if this happens or that happens. They just have a job, they do it, and they do it really well and really fast. You know, and they're willing to give up those underneath passes, and you know, if you're going to keep catching them, Cam Chancellor's going to keep showing you what he does, and you know, Earl and the rest of the guys are going to keep laying hat to you, and you know, just going to keep doing it. I'm more interested, honestly, to see about when the Seahawks offense has the ball against the Patriots, because you know, Belichick is always known for what he does against quarterbacks and what he does scheme-wise. And you go back to that game when we played, Sean and I were talking earlier, back in 2012, with, you know, the game that really put the Seahawks, this version of the Seahawks, on the map, and especially Richard Sherman with the now infamous tweet, you know, with the "You Mad Bro" caption. What do you see there?
Well, I think that the Baltimore game is telling in a few ways, because Justin Forsett put up a pretty big game with a zone blocking scheme, one cut and go. And that obviously should sound familiar, because that's what the Seahawks do. They just have a completely different running back. Justin Forsett, we all remember him. He's definitely the scat back type, and I don't think anyone would describe Marshawn Lynch as a scat back. He'll just go through you. But he can make you miss. He's got a little wiggle. So the fact that the Ravens had good success running that zone-blocking scheme, and the fact that a huge guy like Vince Wilfork in the middle kind of got lost in the crosshairs of that zone-blocking scheme, at least against the run, just that opens up a world of possibilities for the Seahawks offensively. I think they're going to be able to run the ball even without the read option look. And obviously once you introduce the read option look and have that threat, it's going to make it even more difficult to run. So Marshawn Lynch had an absolutely huge NFC Championship game, 25 carries, 157 yards, 110 of those 157 came after contact, and he's going to have numerous opportunities on Sunday. New England's defense is good, not great, it's good. They are healthy, which obviously is a big deal, considering the Seahawks went up against an immensely banged-up Denver defense in the Super Bowl last year. Seahawks offense did. I just think this is another game for Marshawn Lynch. Again, even before you introduce the read option, I think Lynch is a prime candidate to have another huge game like he did in the NFC Championship game.
Easily the best back in football right now, given Adrian Peterson basically being out for the last year plus with his personal issues. Would you say Marshawn is hands down the best back in the league?
Well, he's the toughest to tackle, and I think there might be a conversation surrounding DeMarco Murray, but you got to do it for more than 1 year, and there's some ball security issues with DeMarco Murray. Right now he is, and I think another reason why is what we've seen out of the passing game, and it's not often, but it's one or two times a game where he makes a huge play and a big impact through the air. That wheel route that he ran out of the backfield for that big completion, 26 yards, he stepped out of bounds, but ultimately they punched it in. And New England's going to do a lot of that man stuff. They're going to play a little bit man, and when you've got man-up coverage, you've got a chance to run a wheel route out of the backfield with Lynch, they're going to utilize that. Right now, he has to be the best. I mean, he dominates the yardage after contact. He's number one in that category by a country mile, and he is an identity of the team. There's been great running backs, and there are a ton of them around, but truly, he is the identity of the team. He's what makes the offense go, and he had the greatest impact in the game late in the NFC Championship game. The reason why the Green Bay Packers were in a zero-coverage blitz look that Russell Wilson checked out of to throw to Kearse was because Lynch had been gashing them to that point. The 25 carries, the 157 yards, and all of a sudden, in overtime, when you're going to guard the goal line, that's the one thing you can't do is allow the touchdown, and you're the Packers' defense, and you completely sell out. You go zero coverage blitz, and then it was a running play. They had it called right, but Russell Wilson knew it was coming, checked out of it, and had Kearse with no safety help over the top. That's all the impact of Marshawn Lynch. And teams, they have to pick their poison, and I think that's why Seattle can be difficult. If they don't shoot themselves in the foot, they can't be so difficult to defend against.
Steve, do you think part of that cover zero that the Packers ran there was also them thinking, we can beat these receivers, the whole pedestrian, decent but not great, not a number one receiver on the roster, yet time and time again, Kearse, Baldwin, somehow find a way to get it done.
Yeah, I think there's part of that. I think there's part of that for sure, that that Green Bay figured that they'd be okay putting their guys on an island. But that's just that's a big sellout to stop the run when you're in that kind of look. And Marshawn Lynch obviously was the reason that happened. And, shoot, I've watched that play 100 times like a lot of other people have too. And Green Bay was completely flat-footed there. Marshawn Lynch was looking to pick up a blitz. It never came. Green Bay just got stuck in the middle. Yeah, there's definitely part of the fact that the receivers may not have, at least from a game planning perspective, as much attention on them. And boy, I don't know. I every time I see a postseason game, I see Jermaine Kearse make a play, and that was great, especially after the two drops. And I put both of those interceptions on him. You know, Russell probably should have had only two interceptions instead of four, but obviously to see Kearse kind of keep his head in the game and. And obviously Russell Wilson, for that matter, was pretty impressive, and we all know how that thing ended.
Steve, with the with Super Bowl 49 and the Patriots, you know, how do the Seahawks, what do they plan for on defense? The kitchen sink coming at them? Because, as you mentioned, one game Blunt has three carries, the next he has 30. So as the defensive coordinator and the players on the field, you almost have to be ready for anything.
Yeah, they are. And Bobby Wagner today during a media session said just as much. We're ready for whatever they throw at us. And that gets back to the conversation about keeping it simple. When you have simple tasks and you have, you know, very simple responsibilities, you can let your instincts take over. You know, we talked a little bit earlier in mentioning Gus Bradley, and Gus Bradley's quote when he was here was all the time was Picasso only used three colors when he would paint, and which is you're going to do very few things, but you're going to do those very few things very, very well. So when you're in a situation where you're going to get multiple looks, multiple strategies, but you just kind of worry about your own job and worry about your own task, if you do that with 11 different guys on the field, you always hear the phrase play on a string. We've heard Bobby Wagner say it. We've heard Earl Thomas say it. Now it's there because they've had the positive reinforcement of doing that, of trusting the guy next to you to do his job, you do yours. And they've been doing it for so long now, it's almost second nature. So, yeah, we're going to see a lot of different things, but we're probably not going to see the Seahawks move out of what they do. Any adjustment they're going to make is going to be personnel. It won't be anything along the lines of a scheme or a look or whether they want to play quarters coverage or zone or man. They're just going to do their normal routine based on down and distance and based on what they have been doing. And it's going to be up to New England. They're going to put the onus on the New England offense to make enough plays through the course of a 60-minute game to try and win it.
Steve, the tough question for you, the final one. What do you see happening on Sunday in Arizona? Will the Seahawks come back with a second Lombardi Trophy?
I think it's going to be a lot lower scoring of a game than most people. I know the total in Vegas is hovering around 50. I think it's 49.5. I don't think either one of these teams are going to be in the 30s. I could see these two teams in the low to mid-20s, and I could even see one team in the 20s and one team in the teens. So we'll start right there. This is going to be a closely contested, lower scoring game, I think, than most people think it's going to be. This is a classic feel-out process early. I see maybe not sloppy play, but I see a game that kind of is a grinder to begin with. A lot of punts, a few three and outs on both sides, and I could see this thing opening up a little bit in the second half. I do believe the Seahawks are going to win the game. I've looked at all the metrics, and I've been watching the last few New England games, and obviously I'm familiar with what Seattle does. I am familiarizing myself with what New England does. And again, over the course of a 60-minute game, Seattle has an answer to every one of New England's weapons. Think about it. Rob Gronkowski is the best tight end in football. I'm not going to take that away. Seattle has the best strong safety in football in Cam Chancellor. If you want to talk about Brandon LaFell or Julian Edelman or Danny Amendola, I'll put Richard Sherman. I'll put Byron Maxwell. I'll put Jeremy Lane. I'll put Therald Simon out there. LeGarrette Blount, big guy, 247 listed. We know he's over 250. He can get skinny when he wants to if he needs to get through a hole, but I look at that interior line. I look at Michael Bennett. I look at Bobby Wagner in the middle. Tom Brady, great. He gets the ball out quickly. He doesn't get sacked only 26 times on the year because he gets it out quickly. But he likes the underneath stuff. Well, Seattle tackles the guy after a gain of 3 instead of a gain in 7. And when you are forcing an offense to play from 2nd and 7 and 2nd and 8 instead of 2nd and 2, you're going to win that game, again, over the course of 4 quarters of football. If Seattle does what they normally do, which is to tackle the underneath stuff, not get beaten deep, put enough pressure to make a stationary quarterback a little uncomfortable, run the football effectively, which they're going to have an opportunity, they're going to win the game. I believe Seattle's going to win the game. I could see this going 23-17, 24-20, 27-20, somewhere along those lines. I'd be surprised if one team gets into the 30s. I think, relatively speaking, we're looking at two teams in the 20s or maybe one in the 20s and one in the teens. But I think Seattle's going to win this, and we'll be talking about back-to-back Super Bowl champions.
You know, Steve, you mentioned something about Jermaine real quick. Jermaine Kearse, local product, Lakes High School, University of Washington. Not very heralded. I mean, you know, he had a good college career, undrafted, obviously. And like you said, in the playoffs, he has always come through. Do you expect him to show up once again in the Super Bowl?
Absolutely. He's got the credentials. I mean, if it weren't a blowout last year against Denver, think about this guy.
He would have been MVP.
That play when he spun off two guys and broke a third tackle and got into the end zone, think about
yeah.
it. If the game was still
That's
hanging
a great
in the balance,
play.
If the game was still hanging in the balance and it was, I don't know, let's just pick a number, if it was 17-17 at the time he made that play, that would have gone down as one of the greatest individual plays in Super Bowl history. But it happened in
yes.
a blowout. It happened after the game had pretty much already been decided. So it was just an afterthought. Jermaine Kearse finds a way to make a big play in postseason games. He does it just about every time. I mean, it's absolutely incredible. And I think he doesn't get enough credit for working hard to this point, because everyone said, oh, he had the drops at UW, but he got LASIK surgery and now he can see the ball. Well, that's not doing him any justice. He worked his tail off to become a better receiver. He worked his tail off in terms of his routes, his study habits, catching the football, and the fact that he could have those two balls that he admitted that were on him, that were intercepted, and to come back and be ready, just to be ready to make a play, is the testament, obviously. And then he makes the play. It's absolutely outstanding to see how he's progressed. And man, what would it be to beat Jermaine Kearse? Go to Lakes High School in Tacoma, go to UW, play for the Seahawks, already have a world championship and a highlight play in that world championship game, and then a chance to do it again the next year. But he deserves everything he has gotten. That guy has worked his tail off, and Pete Carroll challenged him. Pete Carroll challenged him early in his career in Seattle when he first ended up signing as an undrafted free agent, said, I think you're a better player than you've shown, so you got to show it. So credit Pete Carroll for lighting a fire under Jermaine Kearse as well.
Yeah, and he played, what, the most of his first year, or year plus, on the practice squad?
Mm-hmm. He's been a guy that's been the undrafted free agent to the practice squad, to the big team, to contributor for the big team. He's just slowly climbed the ladder each of the last few years.
Made contributions on special teams, things
mm-hmm.
of that nature. Nobody ever gave him the easy way to start him, but every opportunity he's had, he's taken advantage of. I go back to the first game in last year, a tough game against the Carolina Panthers on the road. You know, we're still stinging from the Atlanta Falcons playoff defeat the year before. And, you know, that big play, the curse to win that game, end of the game. 12-7, I believe, was the final score. And just ever since, he's just keeps showing up. And not just Jermaine, but, you know, Baldwin makes his big plays. Willison and Helfelt, it seems like every time the ball is thrown, I just go back 10 years, 7 years, you know, mid-2000s, the Seahawks always desperately looking for receivers. It seemed like we always led the league in drop passes, and it seemed like any time we had a significant play, a big third down conversion or a wide open receiver downfield, the ball would always go off the hands. And to see now everybody just coming through in the clutch, and it's not a bunch of first and second round picks, but even the first and second round picks, the Earl Thomases, and they've all panned out and come through and better, you know, just we've had so much good fortune in everything, health-wise, draft picks, undraft, you know, just all everything that they've done, they've found gold.
You know, the interesting comment surrounding that is, number one, the ball that Russell Wilson throws is part of what you described with the receivers currently and the tight ends. He throws a spiral every time. Go look around the league. Go look around the league and watch the ball wobble just a little bit. Russell Wilson throws an immensely catchable ball. I think that's part of it. The other end of your remark is, this is just going to blow you guys away, and you're not going to be shocked by it, but if you say it out loud, it's really impressive. Earl Thomas is only 25 years old. I mean, this guy is maybe not even at the peak of his career yet, and he's already one of the best, if not the best, free safeties in football. He was the original in the LOB. It was guys like Deion Grant in the defensive backfield as a safety that he replaced. It was guys like Marcus Trufant. And when he was drafted in 2010, 14th overall, he stepped in and immediately made plays from day one. So before Sherman and before Cam Chancellor had his chance to make an impact, it was Earl Thomas from day one. He was the original LOB. It's amazing. He's only 25 years old, and he has so much great football in front of him. A lot of those guys, they're still a very young team. So it's really exciting to think about, if not winning the Super Bowl every year, which is unattainable, at least having a shot and being in the race and being in the hunt and maybe building something toward a dynasty, especially if you win on Sunday.
Steve, we'll let you run, but since you brought up Earl Thomas, what's the word on his shoulder and then Sherman's elbow? They say they're all right. Is that really what's going on?
Well, we saw Earl in the second half of that game. He had a separated shoulder and was popped back into place. And they had a harness holding his shoulder underneath his pads. And that was before he decided to go take on Eddie Lacy and knock him into the bench. You remember that play when Earl came up and popped him?
Yeah.
He's given up 50 pounds to Lacy. I mean, Lacy's 245. Earl's probably like 205. You know, so he's given up a ton of weight, and that was after that shoulder was separated. With the harness on, he goes up and drills him. So if he's going to do something like that in the NFC title game, believe me, you know, 2 weeks to have that shoulder rested, he's going to be good to go. Plus, even if it was less than 100%, his range, his anticipation, his speed, his closing ability, none of that's affected by the shoulder. Sherm, if it's too bad, if it's bothering him, he can play in a brace. They've been noncommittal. They haven't decided whether he's going to wear a brace or not. But he's Sherm. He's competitive as all get out. So I think that's going to be a media story that people are going to focus on, the health of guys like Sherman and Thomas. And obviously now that Brandon Browner said what he did, it's going to be even a bigger focus. But in terms of those two injuries impacting the game, I don't think it's going to impact their abilities at all.
Steve Sanmaia, thanks for hanging on longer than anticipated. Listen to Steve on his own show, the Steve Sanmaia Show, weekdays, 3 p.m., CBS Sports Radio in Seattle, 1090 The Fan. Thanks for your time, Steve.
Anytime. Go Hawks.
Thanks, Steve.
Sure.
Absolutely. Go Hawks, and it is getting down to it. We are just about... Man, we are into Super Bowl week. You've got coverage going crazy on all the sports channels and even the non-sports channels because it is the biggest spectacle in the world, John.
Yes, indeed. You know, and as always, I always look forward to, you know, not only the football, but the halftime show, the commercials, just everything that involves Super Bowl. You know, for a good 4 or 5 months of the year, you know, that every Sunday it's almost like church, you know. Football, and then you know, right after the Super Bowl, we'll start looking at the combine and the young players coming in from college. And you know, football, they only play maybe for 4 or 5 months, but the NFL and football in of itself goes pretty much the whole calendar year.
All right, John, I normally do this to Mr. Boyd. What is your prediction for Super Sunday?
Well, my prediction is to be around a lot of family and friends, you know, being blessed with good food and company, and watching the Seahawks come out victorious, solidifying not only their team, but their defense is one of the best ever, up there with those Giants and Bears and teams, you know, when you think great defenses. And I honestly think, similar to Steve, I don't think either team's going to get up into the 30s maybe, but I think it's going to be a little bit more one-sided. I think it's going to be something like 27-14 Seahawks.
Wow, that's close to where I was going with it. I think Seattle's offense is going to be on point since they were not last week, and they're going to come out guns blazing. They're not going to be conservative. Why would you? It's the Super Bowl. If you're going to be conservative, that's not the place for it. And, you know, I'm not seeing any flea flickers or fake field goals, but, you know, I just think that everybody's going to do their job, be on point. They're going to move the chains. It won't be a blowout like last year in New Jersey at MetLife Stadium against the Broncos, but I think it'll be into the fourth quarter still. Could go either way. I see a 27-17 Seahawk victory, the second Lombardi Trophy at Seahawk HQ in Renton.
Yeah, and that would be nice. That'd be a great thing to see. You know, Paul Allen, one of the better owners, out there raising the flag. I know that really got the 12s excited last week against the Packers. You know, and the fans. You know, I see all the stuff on Facebook, and they talk about you know, I hear people talking about these Seattle fans that came out of the woodwork or jumped on the bandwagon. And, you know, if you look back through the numbers, you know, and they got this thing, I guess, you can look online called Google, and you can look on the line and stuff, and you can look back at attendance records over the last 20, 30 years, and the Seahawks and the Kingdome, you know, they hold their own, and they weren't always with special teams, especially, you know, Cortez Kennedy, you know, played on a 2-14 team. We have some teams that, you know, weren't always the best product out on the field, but the fans have always been supportive, and hence you have the 12s and the retired jersey, you know, the 12 that hangs in the rafters with just the three players. You know, Seattle's a tough sports town, you know. Mariners, Ken Griffey Jr., God bless him, you know, the Mariners still don't have a single jersey retired. I mean, that might be a story for a different show, but I was talking with Randy Adamek, their person in charge of the media, and I tell you what, I was surprised, and it's because their requirements and prerequisites are so stringent.
Well, we all know that 24 will be retired soon enough, especially when in 2016, a junior will be definitely in Cooperstown. So definitely that will be happening down the road for both Griffey and the Mariners, and absolutely a topic for another show. And before we run, once again, God bless, Godspeed, all great things, great words of wisdom, positivity, kindness out to the Boyd family. Gil Boyd needing a little bit of recovery, and I know you got a lot of fight in you, Mr. Boyd, so now's the time. Let's definitely, you know, just look at social media, John. You've talked about it today with looking at things for the Super Bowl, but look at Facebook for people that have reached out, and you yourself put a post out there to let people know what's going on with Mr. Boyd, and look at all the responses. Look at all the love. Look at all the prayers. Look at all the things that people are reaching out. And John, guys like yourself that are able to get to the hospital. Unfortunately, I'm not in the Pacific Northwest, so I can't be there. And you know, but you've rattled off names of friends and guys that you and the Boyd family have known for 20, 30 years that have come through and sent their well wishes, and it's just great the way people rally and
come through and show that they care.
Well, you know, one thing about Gil is, you know, he touched a lot of people's lives. You know, he was a coach and a teacher for a long time, quality member of his community and church, you know, patriarch of his family. And anybody that's ever met Gil will tell you that if the one thing that he did is he put a smile on your face, you know. He was genuine as all he could be, and he was the nicest guy you could ever meet. And we just have all our prayers, and you know, for him and his family to get well quick. And you know, Gil, everybody's thinking about you, man.
John,
I appreciate you both letting me fill in for the night, man. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, well, thanks for stepping in and pinch hitting. You did a great job. You've always had great sports knowledge and a good background yourself. So hopefully we'll have you back on both as a caller and a guest host, because I know down the road I may not be able to be on the show at a time or two. So we'll definitely have you back on, sir. Thanks so much.
Thank you, guys. Thank you, too,
right,
Don.
That's going to wrap up on the Double with the Double S Express. For John Wittig, I am Sean Wally in Houston. Sean Boyd, keep your head up, man. Mr. Gil Boyd, Boyd family, we love you. We will talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening to On the Double with the Double S Express. Join us next Monday for great sports talk and big-time guests. On the Double with the Double S Express.